Welcome, dear listeners, to another episode from me, Oliver Schirach, on my podcast, Oliver Schirach Show. And I have here Esha Patel on the other side, like half around the world in Australia. It's an early bird for me, the earliest episode I take. So if I make some mistakes, please, I've just woken up. Hello, Esha.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Thank you for coming. And Esha has her YouTube channel and has had her appearances on several podcasts, mainly on 5D, spirituality, awakening, and lately on aliens. So let's get started with my favorite questions to see who you really are. If you would have to describe yourself in three adjectives, what would those be and why would you choose those three?
This is a really great question. It is one that I get asked from time to time, and I feel like my answer always depends on how I feel in the moment, because I think sometimes three words just isn't enough. What I will say is one time I asked my audience what they think of me, and the three words that came back from them was typically that I'm ambitious, I'm very driven and hardworking, and I'm very intuitive. So I'd say those kind of sum up how I get seen by the public. But as for myself right now, if I had to give myself three words, I feel calm, I feel connected, and I feel very open to whatever conversation is going to happen today.
Okay, so how comes this difference between ambitious and calm? That the public sees you ambitious, but you're more feeling calm.
I think people see a version of you that gets put out based on like a period of time. Whereas if I'm focusing just on the moment, like in this particular moment right now, I don't feel particularly ambitious. I've just shown up to do this interview and I'm very much just, it's like I've stepped out onto a blank playing field and I have no idea what's coming because we haven't prepared anything. It's a very free-flowing conversation. But when people see me running events, like I've done some very big projects, I've run summits with over 1,000 attendees, I've run very big, like global sort of ventures. And so when people see those things, they naturally would go, oh, Isha's very ambitious. She's very driven by the mission. And that's true from the longer term perspective. So it's quite interesting when this concept of time comes into play, because when we perceive people through the longevity of time, we might see them in a particular way and we might put them into a stereotype or a box. But I think people in the moment are very malleable. People are very much changing from moment to moment. And yet if you observe them for a period of time, then you get to know who they are based on, I guess, a longer sort of measurement of that. So it just is interesting how people perceive me versus how I feel in every moment, because sometimes they can be vastly different and at other times they might be spot on. So you just never know, I guess.
Yeah. So I can see this ambition and driven comes very closely together. Having seminars of 1,000 people sounds like there's a lot of work. Was it also a lot and hard of work to create those big events, or was it coming in the flow? Like you say, now you're just calm, you're connected, you take how it comes. How do you take these situations when you have like these big events coming up?
That particular one actually was probably one of the easiest, most effortless events I've ever created. And it really, I mean, if I can give you the behind the scenes of it. So we ran this event in February last year, which was 2022. And it was for the True Gateway. I know there's a lot of twos in there, a bit of a mouthful. So it was the 22nd of February, 2022, where we ran this event. Now, the vision for that particular event came to me probably towards the end of the year before. And I remember on the 1st of January, so very first day of the year, fresh energy. I had a friend who had stayed over the night before. We were just watching movies and had like a very sort of low-key get-together at my house. And then it was the morning of the 1st of January, and I was like, right, I'm on mission. I've got this thing. I've got 1 month and 22 days to do it. So I literally kicked everyone out the house at 10 a.m. I said, bye, guys. I'm focusing. I'm meditating. And I'm going to call in my vision. And that's how it went, you know. So everyone kind of left for the next couple hours. And then I think eventually she came back at some point. And then I was writing stuff on my whiteboard. I was building that vision. I was visualizing how it was going to go. I created my plan. Like, all of that happened before noon on the first day of the year. So then I had 1 month and 22 days to pull it all together. But because that vision and that energy was so strong from that first day, it really, I mean, it just came together. Like, I sent a few emails, I did a few posts, but energetically, it really didn't feel like I was pushing this event or like having to exert like a large amount of energy to create it, which for me was quite a pleasant experience because at that point, it was the biggest event I'd ever run. So it kind of exceeded my own expectations in thinking that, oh, this is going to be really hard work. And I'm not averse to hard work. I've done a lot of hard work in my time. When push comes to shove, I will show up and I'll do what needs to get done. But there are also moments where I think people really, they underestimate the power of the universe and that extra backing that you get. Like, when something is meant to happen and when there's a real energy behind it, there is this feeling of just being carried along by this wave and you kind of just show up and do the bits that you feel like doing and everything else kind of comes together. So yes, there was work involved. And of course, we had a team in place as well. I didn't do the event by myself. We had a marketing team. We had an administrative team. We had a number of people that were on board supporting as well. And then all the speakers that were involved as well were part of that creation too. So it definitely wasn't a solo effort, but at the same time, my experience of landing on that particular day, it felt quite easy. I just thought, okay, I've created it. It's done. It's already been manifested. All I have to do now is just show up and deliver this thing and see what happens. And that's kind of how it went.
That's beautiful. But I also asked this question because I've heard you talk in a few episodes of it's not things that are meant to happen don't have to come through hard work, right? That many people have this masculine energy, me included, work to get somewhere. But sometimes it's just like, oh, then I do this, then I do that, and then this big thing happens. And you just followed one step after the other, were in the flow, not stressed, not overthinking. And it sounds a bit like that. It's like this great idea. Before I continue this path, I ask the second question to see if there's something else coming up. If you would be a color in a new coloring box, like you would be the new color in a coloring box, what color would you be and why?
A new color? Like a color that doesn't exist yet?
You're just a new set. The new kid on the street or something like that. What color would you be? It could be any color that exists or could be also a color which doesn't.
Because my mind immediately goes to all the beautiful colors that I see in meditation that don't actually exist here on Earth. I'm like, that would be me. There's like a whole cosmic spectrum of frequencies that you can't actually, they don't even have words here on Earth. And so when you say, what color would you be? I'm like, well, obviously that one. So if I had to put a word to it, it would be some sort of like cosmic, violet sort of frequency color that would be me in a box.
And why would you be that?
I feel like that color really resonates with me. I think when I tune into these cosmic frequencies that I see quite frequently, there's a couple of energies that come up quite a lot. One is like this very cosmic, it's almost like a sort of like a neon violet purpley sort of color. And the other one is similar in characteristics, but more like a turquoise spectrum. And they're frequencies that come through quite a lot. And when I tune into them, they feel very expansive, but also they feel very much like home. And I know that for me, I mean, we're diving into the deep end already. It's to do with my soul aspects and the particular connections I have. So for example, that cosmic violet frequency connects to a very specific soul aspect of myself on another planet. And it's one that I tap into quite frequently. Just, you know, it makes me feel like I'm at home. And also I can tap into that to draw upon guidance or wisdom or anything like that. So that's where that frequency and the familiarity with the energy comes from.
Okay, so if going back home, it's interesting that you say purplish because I had another guest which said his color would, I think it was also a purple that you cannot see in life, like in here in the 3D world. It's when he's using black mirrors to meditate or something like that, he sees the similar colors. And that you went for a similar description is interesting. Gives mm-hmm. me, I haven't had that experience. It gives me just the feeling like, oh, when I see these colors I cannot see here, it's purplish.
Right. Or, well, they have lots. I mean, there's lots of colors out there. There's like every color that we have here on Earth, there's a higher vibrational version of that color that we can't perceive. And more compared to what we have, we see such a small spectrum of color with our eyes. And even in that, like apparently men and women don't see the same color spectrum. Apparently women can identify more shades than men. Like as a generalization, typically women can see, like sometimes you say to someone, well, it's not violet. It's like this exact shade of fuchsia with like, you know, these pinkish tones. And some people are like, what are you talking about? You know? And so even inside the colors, I mean, you've got your red, blue, pink, purple, but then you've got deeper shades and variations in that. And then you imagine you take all of those frequencies up to a higher octave altogether, and you get this like almost neon light field color spectrum that's just, it's just so unique.
So if you go down that rabbit hole a bit, so when you meditate, you say you see these colors. I don't know, you meditate with closed eyes, or it's just the surrounding of you changing in colors, or how does that happen for someone which doesn't have experience in that?
Both. Sometimes I close my eyes, but other times I could just be sitting. So like, for example, I've got a little spot in my living area with a couple of chairs. I've got a little altar behind me, which has, I've got my crystals and all my things on there. And so, yeah, when I'm sitting there meditating, sometimes it'll be with eyes open and I will actually see the frequency come in. One frequency that I see quite often, and by see, I also mean feel, because when you're dealing with the non-physical realm, it's a very much a felt sense rather than a physical seeing at times. But there is a felt sense of the energy of Mother Mary coming through, and that comes through always in a very specific pink color spectrum, and often surrounded by a visionary or even sometimes a smell of roses. So it's not just the one color that comes through, it's actually a frequency that's coming through, and that frequency can be sensed through many different ways. And I think the same sort of applies with these other cosmic energies that I speak of. Yes, I see them as colors, but actually every single one has a feeling that's associated with it as well. So even if I tap into that cosmic realm and I see the color blue, I mean, there's so many shades of blue. There's the Arcturian blue, there's Pleiadian blue, there's Archangel Michael blue. There's like so many different blues. And they all, you know, if you were to take a coloring pencil, they would look almost identical, but they're not, because the felt sense behind that is so unique.
Wow, you're going really deep. You're already answering questions that come up in my head. It's like, I thought of, when you talked about this frequency of color, for like, okay, how does she perceive them? Are there feelings or smells according to it? Or yeah, tastes? Do you have also, now you said rose, but do these different frequency colors also have different like, yeah, smells or tastes? Or do they also have kind of like meaning? There's like in indigenous cultures or other cultures, the different colors have different meanings, or when people can read the aura with the different colors, mm-hmm. they also have meanings to what's coming. Do these frequencies that come into you, and when you see these different shades of blue, as you mentioned now, Arcturian, and now you didn't say Orion, you said something else, but do they also give you kind of a hint what's coming to happen, or what happened, or how you feel?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, it just depends on what you're sort of tuning into. So like, I know sometimes people say, you know, different auras have different meanings, and I'm a little bit hesitant sometimes to use those frameworks. It's the same as like when people say that all rose quartz crystals are for your heart chakra. It's like, well, yeah, like for the most part, but it's also like saying all Chinese people are the same. Well, like, it's like, yes, there's a certain generalization that we can place on different ethnic groups, the same way that you can characterize certain crystals. But if you actually get to know each crystal, then you'll realize that each one is unique in its own frequency. So I have a rose quartz crystal that connects to a starship. I have another rose quartz crystal that has an angelic frequency in it. And I have another rose quartz crystal that is for my heart chakra. So I think, you know, people really tend to put things in boxes without taking the time to get to know that individual energy or that individual frequency. And so the same concept applies in the higher dimensional color spectrum, because when you're tuning into these different colors, firstly, they're not just colors, they're frequencies. And when they're frequencies, they do have a much larger packet of information attached to that. And so when you can tune into that, you can see, okay, well, this is this very specific blue that I'm tuning into right now. I am getting a sense that it's an Archangel Michael energy. And I know that because in my visuals, I'm also seeing his sword, and I'm also seeing other things that might clue me into to what that energy is. Now, if you're not particularly visual, you can still get the same felt sense just by tuning in and feeling. Like, some people might hear the name Archangel Michael, or they might perceive it in a very different way. Either way, you still, when you tune into the energy, there's a knowing that he's Archangel Michael. So, like, you know, so for me, that particular energy, it does associate with Archangel Michael. But then if you were to take that same color and then look at the meaning of that color in an aura book, it might be something completely different. You know, that shade of blue in an aura might have to just do with the throat chakra or something. So, like, it's hard to sort of put everything in boxes and intellectualize it, because this is beyond intellect. What's actually happening is we're stepping from knowledge into wisdom. And when you go into wisdom, it's not necessarily about following those boxes or those procedures so much as it is being in the moment and tuning into what is that frequency. And if there is a meaning, what is that meaning for you in that moment? Because the meaning that you receive from that color in that meditation at that precise moment in time could be completely different to another moment in time with either a different person or even with yourself. If you yourself sit in meditation on another day and receive that same color frequency, it may or may not have the same meaning. And so that's where having that open heart and that ability to perceive frequency is much more important than trying to just intellectualize it and go read some meaning in a book, because that meaning was true for that person at that time, but might not actually be true for you. And so you really have to learn to speak the language of frequency to receive those messages and the meanings of that in the present moment.
Wow, there's many questions that pop up in my head for that. So one, you said it's the meaning for you. So that means the different feelings, the different colors, the different tastes and smells you get, you interpret them on the go at that moment, or you have established a certain meaning for these different things during your life, during your experience. So for you, this certain shade of red or blue or green has the same kind of meaning, or is it really you have to tune in the moment to realize, okay, this time it means something else?
It's always an in the moment thing, but there are some frequencies that now have a very solid foundation. Like, I always know if it's Archangel Michael, I always know if it's Nocturian energy, I always know if it's a Pleiadian energy. I always know if it's a Lyran energy coming from specific constellations. So there are some over time that I've kind of categorized and go, okay, when that energy comes in and it has these other qualities, this is what it means. But then it's not necessarily just based on the color as it is based on the other contextual factors as well. Yeah. The same thing, for example, I've taken a lot of photos of craft and orbs. And when you take a picture of an orb, I mean, I've sat around with my friends, like four or five of us, who sit there and we will all say what we perceive or what energies we feel in those orbs. And it always happens that I might say, for example, pick up a Polaran energy from the star system Polaris, but then my friend next to me will go, yeah, actually, I'm feeling like feline energies, lion energies and beings. And I'm like, great. Neither of us are wrong, because a lot of these orbs or these multidimensional energies, they are very multifaceted. And so then what happens is, through our ability to connect and depending on our soul frequencies and our experiences, we might tune in to different sides of the same thing and go, okay, well, I perceive this and someone else perceives that. And they're actually both correct, because that orb might have like 20 different frequencies in it. So then you have to kind of, open that, I guess, Pandora's box a little bit further and go, well, hang on a second, maybe these frequencies aren't as linear as we think they are. So a blue frequency isn't always about your throat chakra, just like a red frequency isn't always about your root chakra. A red frequency could also be an Andromedan being, or it could be something else entirely. And so the ability to tune in the present moment and expand that vastness, I think, is really where the work is and where people need to be a little bit more open-minded instead of just taking the very first meaning that someone has presented to them.
Yeah. So that means basically to learn to trust yourself, be more authentic, more grounded in yourself instead of following others to...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, inner wisdom is first and foremost, I think, the most important thing that we as a human race can be cultivating at this time. There's a lot of people out there that are teaching cookie cutter methods and modalities and things like that. And I've been around the field long enough to have seen a lot of them. I've tried some of them myself. And ultimately for me, what it comes down to is if you can learn how to find your own guidance and wisdom, then from that point on, you no longer need to have other modalities or other processes because you almost go beyond process. And really, I mean, that's been my work for the last decade, which is to teach people like the last process essentially that they'll ever learn, origin activation, the modality that I created it because I wanted people to stop doing modalities. I'm like, learn this one modality, learn how to get out of modalities, and then trust your own guidance. You'll never need another process again. Because you'll have everything that you need, which is the direct connection and the confidence and the intuition to really move forward in that.
Yeah. And there I can see many people, me included, right? I'm going to have an at stake Indian coming, most likely. I tried to organize a seminar for him. And when I talked to him in December, when he was at my mom, he said, I'm a searcher or seeker. He gave me a at stake name for that. And have other people as well. And this comes exactly what you say. When you really intuitively know and stand in yourself and you can trust your intuition and your inner guidance, you don't need all these modalities. And many of us, as I said, including me, we're going for this, then we learn here, then we learn there, then we learn there, and we try to combine everything, which is very exhausting. And it's very confusing as well, because you never really trust yourself. So it's a good thing to teach people to trust themselves. So let's go a little bit back, because you talk about all these things about orbs and crystals and colors and aliens and different energies and dimensions. So where are you coming from? I've heard in one interview that you were an engineer originally. So you were an engineer, but all this intuition, how long back can you trace that? If you can remember.
I mean, look, I was born for this work. Like, I think from before I came on this planet, I decided that this is what I was going to do. And I think I'm pretty certain that I put myself in the situations that would allow me to awaken and have the experiences that I had so that I could then go forward and do my work. I guess one of the big influences that allowed me to sort of open up when I did was that when I was younger, you know, my parents, they were quite open-minded to the supernatural side of things. So I had some experiences as a child. Like, for example, when I was, I think, 9, 10 years old, there was a house that we lived in and there was a ghost in the house. And it was a lady who passed over previously. And like at the time, I didn't really obviously think anything of it. It freaked me out a little bit. But my mom, my sister and I all felt that energy in the house and we saw it and we perceived it. And so having that experience at a young age, it always kept me very open-minded to realize that there's more to the world out there. At the same time, though, my parents would always say to us just to keep the stuff in the house, to not talk about it in school, because they didn't want us getting ridiculed and all that. So, and it was at the time, I'm glad they gave us that advice. But then as I got a bit older and I sort of started coming out with this stuff, I realized that it is becoming more and more sort of known that we're more than just our physical bodies. So I guess the biggest thing for me was that while I wasn't taught any of this growing up, I at least was in a position where it wasn't completely shut down. So when I was perceiving these things, when I did have these experiences, at least I had the ability to talk about it at home. They weren't experts in it, but like, there was an openness in the environment that meant that when I did eventually go through my awakening a lot later on, that there was some sort of foundation in my belief system to go, okay, there is something out there. There is a God. There is energy. There is something out there in the universe that I can trust in. And that foundation is what then later on in life allowed me to then go out and have a much deeper exploration of that.
Yeah, this is a very important point. I can see at 9 years of age, I have two kids, 9 and 12 now, and my son has been, I don't know what the age was, probably 3, 4, 5 years, talked about little invisible wolves which are coming and attack him, and they can change sizes and all these things. I'm like, I cannot see it, but I don't tell him it's not true. Because what if it's really true that he sees that and he can perceive something I cannot perceive? It would be wrong for me to shut it down. And my ex-wife, she's always, yeah, no. Even though her mother had a near-death experience where she got out of the body and saw herself on the operation table. So for me, it's like, this is very important. And my mom, on the other hand, she actually shut that down, even though she sees people which are not living in the 3D world. She's not that open. It's like 2 years ago, she opened up to me and said, yeah, I see these people even there on the forest. But she didn't go deeper into it. She didn't say what kind of people those are. But for us, my sister and me, we grew up with the belief there's nothing else. There's only the material world, even though she perceived the other side. Kind of like she wanted to protect us from the evil, whatever, on the other side, unknown. Yet my sister and me, we both, my sister much earlier than me. For me, it's like only the last 5 years. But I always knew there's more. Open up more to that, right? So it's kind of really nice that you had this environment where you could actually talk at home at a safe place about these feelings and cultivate them, have this inner knowledge. So when we go later down your life, so you learned engineering. What kind of engineer were you? And why did
you choose that? I'm an engineer.
So engineering.
And to be honest, I mean, look, I was 17 in school, you know, I had pretty good grades. I was very good at whatever I did. I was getting pretty much straight A's across the board. And I guess I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I picked something based on the typical, like what would get good money, what would be kind of interesting, what would be intellectually stimulating for me. I did actually, when I was younger, want to be an actress. That was my big dream. But I guess my parents are like, oh, you know, that's like, you shouldn't really pursue that. You should go get a proper career and like, you know, typical sort of things. So I didn't end up going down the road of like going to a performing arts school or anything like that later on. And I decided to do engineering. I mean, it was convenient. Like it was convenient. I had the grades for it. Like, I don't think I was ever super passionate about engineering. I don't think I ever said, oh, I really want to be an engineer. This is what I want to do. I think it was just kind of there and it kind of seemed like a good enough fit. And of course, by the time I got into it, I was 75% in and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. So actually, I didn't like it. I wanted to drop out at some point, but I was so far in that I figured, well, I might as well just finish because I've already done it. And it actually was when I went to Thailand, I went to volunteer a couple of times and I was teaching English to the children there. And when I was doing, that's when I kind of realized I had this passion for teaching. And so when I came back from those trips, I wanted to drop out of engineering and start a bachelor's in education, but it would have been like another 3 years versus the same amount of time. If I just finished my engineering, had 1 year left in engineering, I could have just finished that and then done a 2-year master's and have a higher qualification. So again, it was a matter of convenience and it seemed logical to finish the degree. So I did, and it was hard and I didn't enjoy it. And my grades were very average by the end, but you know, I got through it. And then I did my master's in teaching, and that was something that I really enjoyed. I was very passionate about that. I loved the work that I was doing. I loved working with kids. My grades were amazing. Like, it was something that really sort of fit well for me. And then again, halfway through that degree, I went through a massive life transition, and that's when I had my spiritual awakening. So I loved what I was doing. But at that point, that's when that calling sort of came in to start doing this healing work, this meditation work. And so again, I kind of pivoted gears. I did go back and finish my degree at some point because I like to complete things. And so I've got that master's under my belt as well. And I always knew that one day I would go back to working with children in a different capacity. But I think at that time, whatever it is that I was meant to be doing didn't actually exist yet. And then I realized, well, okay, I'm probably going to be creating it later in life. So I'll be creating some sort of new educational system that I can ripple out through the networks. And so I now have the background and the foundation and the qualifications to then be taken seriously. So later on down the track, when I do develop something that's geared towards children, I will have all the knowledge of the curriculum and the ins and outs of how that works to be able to create that. So I think what I was doing was just gathering pieces until the time was right for me to go and actually find out what it is that I'm here to do. And when that happened, it was like lightning had struck me. I mean, I went from just living this very normal life to suddenly overnight having this spiritual awakening. Within 5 weeks, everything had changed. I dropped out of uni. I ran my first event. I booked a flight to Mount Shasta to go visit the sacred site there. And I basically never looked back from that point.
Okay. It looks like you have been very similar to me, very head-driven. Like, this is logic. This makes sense. There I can make money. There I can have work. There I can be stimulated intellectually. I know that feeling.
Yeah. And also, I don't think they were really my choices. I mean, I was just guided along by what my parents said and what society said and like all these other things. So I don't really even think it was my choice entirely to do it. In fact, what I did want to do, I wanted to go into medicine. So I had an interest in natural healing even back when I was 17. And the only thing was that there were no universities in my state that were teaching the thing that I wanted to study. And I did actually get into a couple of courses on the East Coast, but that would have required moving out of home, you know, financially supporting myself. Basically, my parents talked me out of it. They were like, look, just stay here and be sensible or whatever they told me.
Yeah.
So I think my parents did influence a lot of my decisions at that time. And I think if they weren't influencing me, I probably would have made different choices. I don't regret it and I don't blame them. Obviously, they were looking out for me. I think moving out at 17 and trying to fund yourself and your college is very difficult. And I think it would have been a big struggle. So I think they had a lot of valid points in that. But I think if I, like at 17, I just don't think I had the maturity to make that choice. Like, the truth is that at a very young age, I didn't know who I was. I didn't really know what I wanted. And so I kind of just followed along rather than making any real choices, because I don't think that happened until like my mid-20s when I actually decided and found out what I wanted to do. And that's when things really changed for me.
Yeah. There a question comes up. I've heard several times the 7-year periods of our life, like the first seven years we are connected to mom mostly.
Yeah.
Then from 7 to 14, we are kind of getting to know who we are in the society, in our group. And then from 14 to 21, it's kind of like the other sex, get it, or the same sex, whatever it is, like relationship, romantic relationships. And from 21, it's the vocation, or it's the job, it's learning. Did you feel like that? Did you have like these periods where you can see, oh, I was 27?
Yeah, the 7-year cycle definitely has been valid for me, but not exactly on those specific periods. I mean, my big sort of transition was at 25, and the amount of transformation that I went through, I mean, people were saying to me, they're like, is it your Saturn return? I'm like, no, that's not happening till I'm 29, you know? But it was so big. And then when my Saturn return did come around, it was like a non-event, like nothing really happened, you know? So for me, yeah, it was 25, but also I'm closing that sort of 7-year period. I've been feeling that closing in the last few months. Whoa. So I definitely feel like those 7-year periods are valid. And I know that for me, that 7-year period was very distinctly from 25 to 32, which is where I'm at now. And everything that I've done in the last 7 years is currently in the process of being dissolved as I speak, you know? So I'm kind of in that transition all over again, but this time I know that it's happening. And even though it still comes with its challenges of not knowing what's happening next and, you know, what that's going to bring, at least I have some level of conscious awareness that it is that new 7-year cycle that's starting up for me at the moment. And also for me personally, like I always had that guidance that when I would be in my 33rd year, which is now, that's kind of like my Christ year, in the sense that if you think about the story of Christ, he went through this big journey of kind of discovering who he was and accepting his mission, that he went into the desert for 40 days. And I feel like I'm in the desert period right now, like not knowing what's coming, surrendering everything and just fully being open to whatever that next mission might be. And I have no idea what that's going to be at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll take the road asking you for your awakening, because that's whenever I listen to a podcast where you interviewed and talk about the awakening, I'm like, yeah, but what happened? How did it feel? Because you said in 5 weeks, the whole world changed for you. And now perhaps we have some listeners which have no idea. What are they talking about? Even though I've been talking with near-death people, which were on the other side, Viking lore, and now with you. So if they listen to more episodes, they should be aware of it. But perhaps they just found us, right? Say, who are those two guys? What are they talking about? And you say, you had this awakening. In 5 weeks, everything changed. So what happened? Did you, Eckhart Tolle, in his book, he's describing that he just kind of had this realization of who is me and who is talking in my head with me. And then he woke up later, right? Completely exhausted, happy. Kind of that's the short version. So what happened for you?
Well, there are a number of things that catalyzed the awakening. One of the most significant was the dissolution of the relationship that I was in at the time. So basically what happened was the relationship ended, and then the next morning I woke up and suddenly it felt like everything in my energy field had just lifted up to a whole new level. And I mean, the physical experience of that was the colors literally looked brighter. The sounds were like somehow more melodic and beautiful. It's hard to describe, you know, because I was waking up to the same physical 3D reality that I lived in my whole life to that point. But the way that I was perceiving it had changed, and it felt like this cage around me had just dissolved itself, except that I didn't even know it was there up until it dissolved. So I'd somehow put myself into this cage of life through all the societal structures and all the things and the relationship that clearly wasn't aligned for me, but I thought it was. And when that dissolved, it was like this sense of freedom. Like I suddenly felt lighter. I felt uplifted. But then at the same time, there was all the fear. You know, like for the last few years, I'd been with this person. I'd thought my whole life I was going to spend with this one person. And that when that rug got pulled out from under my feet, it was very challenging to have all of these things happening at once. Because on the one hand, I felt really expansive, and then I felt guilty, and then I felt angry, and then I felt betrayed by him. And the things that happened on his part after that point as well made me really angry, you know. So on the one hand, I was feeling a lot of love and gratitude. And on the other hand, I was just pissed at him because he just did certain things that I thought were really rude and unethical. So there's a lot of mixed emotions in that. But then as I sort of sat in that and went through the motions of, on a practical level, it was moving out of the house. It was gathering all my things. And, you know how breakups go. Like there's a sort of a process afterwards that you go through with people where you kind of build your life back. You gather all of your stuff and you move out of that space, and then you start building your life. And that's what I did. So I moved back home with my parents. And then one of the things that really kept me sane was every single day I was meditating 45 minutes. And so honestly, that was my saving grace. Like if I didn't have my daily meditation practice, I think I would have gone crazy. People say that to have one big transition in your life is really challenging. So if you go through a breakup, that's a big transition. If you go through a career change, that's a big transition. If you move house, that's a big transition. Those three events are considered the three most stressful things in life. And I did all three of them in the space of a month. So like that was crazy, you know? So it was a really big transformation for me. But at the same time, because of that energetic expansion and my meditation practice, there was a moment of, I guess you could say, surrender in that. And when I surrendered into what was happening, suddenly everything opened up for me. I discovered psychic abilities that I didn't know I had. I was suddenly channeling overnight, didn't know I could do that. I was seeing auras. I was seeing colors. I was feeling emotions. My empathic abilities went through the roof to the point where it was overwhelming. I would walk into a shopping center and I could not stand to be there because the people that would walk past me, I would feel everything about them. If they were having a bad day, I would feel that. If they were thinking about sex, I would feel that. If they were just lost in their own world thinking about whatever, I would feel that. And so there was a period for maybe 8, 9 months where I really just had to retreat inward. I couldn't be around people so much. There were so many things in everyday life. I felt like I just couldn't function. And that's why I dropped out of uni, because I used to go to class. And then in the classroom, I couldn't even concentrate. The energy in the room felt so dense for me that I couldn't spend more than 5 minutes in the lecture rooms. And I started skipping classes. My grades started to drop. So I said, I'm going to drop out because I can't do this. I wasn't handing in my assignments on time. I went from being an absolute A superstar student to just, I cannot function doing everyday things. And so I had to have a lot of love and kindness to myself and what I was going through, because there were moments where, especially in those first few weeks, if I could get out of bed, feed myself, and then go to bed, that was considered an accomplishment for the day. And that was all I could manage. You know, dealing with the heartbreak and the transition and the overwhelm and then the awakening and the psychic abilities and feeling all the emotions. And I mean, there were times when it was just too much. And so I think the way that I got through it was just letting myself go through it. So I saw a lot of healers. I meditated every day. I did activities for myself, like going to sound healings and float tanks. And that self-care really is what got me through that process of it.
Wow, there's a lot there. So I had a podcast which calls From Depression to Expression. So I tried to combine the Oliver Schirach Show and that one together, because in the end, to be able to express yourself, you need to be authentic, and that's creativity, right? And the Oliver Schirach Show started with being more creative, whatever that is, right? Could be writing, could be speaking, could be drawing, could be whatever. And I think it's, in the end, it's the same, right? If you're depressed, you cannot truly express yourself through creativity. Now, when I hear you, you say you were overwhelmed. It was a good day that you could get out of bed, eat, perhaps even take a shower and go back to bed. That was a good day. So have you been depressed? How did people perceive you, saying, oh, Esha is depressed? Or was that just your short period?
What I was going through at the time, I mean, it was pretty understandable. I mean, this was only the first few weeks, maybe like 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay, so it was not long.
Something that was prolonged. Mind you, I did have my own journey with depression prior to the breakup, and I was in therapy for depression in the weeks leading up to the breakup. And then because of the breakup, I actually became undepressed, which made me realize how out of alignment the relationship was. So that actually had the opposite effect for me. But then going through the heartbreak and the emotions itself, combined with the spiritual awakening, I guess it's also because of like the channeling and everything else. I mean, I was receiving messages that I didn't know what to do with. Like, for example, I had all my guides coming in saying, Esha, you have to share this stuff with people. And I was getting these downloads and just didn't really know what to do with it, you know? So the internal phase in that part of it wasn't necessarily so much depression as it was just going inwards in that self-discovery, because that's actually when I discovered those sacred geometry codes that then became my very first event, that then became my business, that completely changed my life. So I guess it depends how you want to look at it, because for me, I had moments in those first few weeks where it was a very internal kind of period, but I definitely wouldn't say that my creativity was thwarted. In fact, it was the opposite. It was so creative. I was getting so many downloads that I almost couldn't function in everyday life, because there was so much coming through that I just had to receive it and be in it, that I would forget to like wake up and buy food, you know? So I guess it depends on what perspective you kind of want to take on that.
Yeah, I know, but it's like I sometimes have these periods where so many ideas come in, and yeah, now I'm learning also Ayurvedic yoga, right? About the different doshas, and I'm in all doshas, a little bit too much in the vata. So I have a little bit too many thoughts, but then I can feel this drag. I want to do this, but then I cannot because it's too much, right? So I can understand when you have so many ideas coming in that it could be too much and you cannot really do any of them.
It wasn't even necessarily ideas. It's, I guess the best way to describe it was, honestly, it was like a lightning struck me with energy and all that energy was flowing through my body. And I didn't know how to ground it. Because it wasn't just the breakup, it was the spiritual awakening that happened simultaneously that I had no idea how to handle. If I was just going through a breakup and nothing else, I probably would have been okay. But when you combine like all these big life experiences, so the relationship, the moving out of the house, the changing of the career, and the psychic abilities and all this energy influx at the same time, that was the overwhelming part of it. It was like all this energy was coming through me. And to be fair, I was already connected with my guides, and my guides had been telling me for 2 or 3 years before that point, they're like, Isha, you need to do more yoga. You need to look after your body. You need to like prepare your body for this awakening. So on some level, like I knew it was coming, but I didn't know when and I didn't know how, and I didn't really listen to it. So if I had done more yoga and done more exercise and probably cleaned up my diet a little bit more at that point, then it probably wouldn't have been as overwhelming. Because what happened was the energy started coming through and my body wasn't prepared for it, despite the 3 years of my guides telling me to prepare myself. So this is what happens when you don't listen, right? I mean, I had the guidance, I didn't follow the guidance, and then I had to deal with the consequences of that, because there was like a disparity between the amount of light that my body could hold versus the amount of light that was coming through. And so what was happening physically, my body would just at certain points in the day would start shaking. Like I would physically start shaking, or I'd be lying down and I had these physical jolts because the cells in my body were not prepared enough to receive the amount of energy that was starting to come through at that point.
Yeah. So I was thinking while you talk, why yoga? Why did you guys say yoga? Is it to open up the different chakras and energy centers? Because that's what I learned now in Ayurvedic yoga. It's like all these different, I don't remember the right name, different exercises where you stretch, where you move up and down. It's basically to open up. And some of these exercises are more used in the spring to the summer for the winter time. Was that the reason? So you basically open up your heart chakra, open up your root chakra, your crown chakra, open up all these energy channels so the energy can flow more freely, because the way we live in our life, we are blocking a lot, right? Sitting in front of the computer and have the shoulders forward. So we kind of block the energy flow. Was that the reason, or was there another reason?
Kind of. I mean, at that point in time, I didn't exactly have a problem with my chakras needing opening. They were very open. The problem was that the physical body wasn't capable enough to hold that amount of energy. And, you know, one of the reasons why people do yoga, and yoga comes from India. I'm Indian. Like, I've studied in one of the oldest yoga schools back in India many years ago. And when I did a course with them, they basically said that yoga is more than just the poses. It's a lifestyle. And the whole reason that the spiritual monks would do yoga is so that they can meditate. So they would spend hours and hours preparing their body. So then when they meditate, they're able to actually receive that divine consciousness and that energy to flow through. So what happened was the energy started flowing through, but my body wasn't prepared for it. And that's where I feel like I kind of did things a little bit backwards in a sense, because if I had done it like the correct way, not that there is a correct way, there's only my way and someone else's way of doing things. But if I had done it maybe a more optimized way, what would have happened is I would have prepared my body. And then when the energy did start flowing and that awakening happened, I probably wouldn't have had so much of a physical reaction to it. Because I did, like, my body struggled to handle that amount of energy. And that's where, you know, when you become more empathic and you start feeling energies, particularly emotions, your body, you know, has to work a lot harder to clear it if you haven't. For example, if you haven't been eating well, sleeping well, doing the stretches, looking after the physical vehicle, because this body is the temple that houses the soul. So my soul at that point was on fire. There was so much energy, you know, but my temple wasn't clean. My temple still needed work. And so it took me a while to sort of recalibrate that. Obviously, this was many years ago now. Since then, I've done a lot of water fasting, juice fasting. I've done meditation retreats. I've done lots of things. And so now when I have those volumes of energy moving through me, I don't have the same physical effect as what I used to experience. Back then, though, it was ungrounded. The energy had nowhere to go. And sometimes that can cause, like, I don't think I really had this experience so much, but I know now from having, you know, been in the healing space, is sometimes it can cause a lot of anxiety as well. Because when there's a lot of energy that's ungrounded, it kind of just gets frazzled in your nervous system. And then it makes people feel quite anxious, or they feel like they can't sleep properly. So it's very classic sign of just ungroundedness, to which I say to people, if that's you, go put your feet on the earth and just go back to being that channel, because the energy wants to flow through you. It wants to flow through. And if you are doing the yoga, if you are doing the meditation, but you're still, you know, feeling that anxiety, it just means the energy has nowhere to go. And there's lots of ways that you can channel that. Putting your feet on the earth, on the bare ground, is a really great way to do it. But also for a lot of people, it means that the energy needs to be channeled into something creative. So that could be music, art, business. Like, my business to me is a creative project, because it allows me to channel all this energy and creativity into creating an event or whatever it is that wants to flow through.
Yeah. I mean, I can feel this anxiety sometimes when all these ideas come and I'm blocking myself. I'm not doing, but as soon as I start doing, could be painting, as I see in this side on the back, and or now I'm in woodcraft in school because I couldn't find work 10, 12 years. So I said, I worked a lot with wood, made a terrace and play houses and all these things. Why not? I can see as soon as it's just work and I'm not thinking anymore, then I'm relaxing. When you said the grounding, for me, I'm walking a lot bare feet. I have 5 fingers for the last 13, 14 years. So people look at me like, what? Even in winter and snow, like, yeah, why not? If it's not wet, I can wear my 5 fingers. If I'm not sitting for 10 minutes, it's okay. If I walk, it's okay, because then I have heat. I also walk in water, but somehow I don't have the feeling I'm really grounding. So I must be very uncentered, because it takes me for lots of long walks. But let's not go there. I was thinking of several things. I mean, you mentioned grounding, going walking and be bare feet. And you mentioned about having 45 minutes of meditation daily. Is there any, that's probably also a grounding practice, right? To just sit there and.
Not necessarily. Actually, most of my meditation practices are expansive more than they are grounding, which is why I need the grounding. Because when I meditate, particularly back then, so the practice I was using back then was a Merkaba light body activation. And that is anything but grounding. I mean, that's like, that practice is going to take you up and out into the universe and journey everywhere, you know? So I wouldn't call it grounding. For me, it was very expansive and opening. But then I had to counter that through other grounding practices. And I guess it comes with time and practice. Like this morning, just before getting on this show, actually, I did a Merkaba light body activation. And I felt very grounded at the end of it, because while I was doing it, I was still centering myself and connecting into the earth. And so what I've learned over time is how to meditate in a very expansive way and still have my feet on the ground. Because one of the things that I did back then was I would just go off and journey, and it was great. I mean, I met all these different beings from different planets, and I would connect in with my soul aspects. I'd be flying around on starships. And then I'd come back to Earth and I'd be like, what's going on? You know? So I've definitely in the past had a very sort of top heavy, I guess you could say, energy field, where my upper chakras are very open and then my lower chakras definitely needed a bit of work. And I think over the years, I've learned to just balance that out a little bit more and have a bit more integration. So if I am doing very expansive meditations like I did this morning, I would then balance it out with the foods that I eat, with walking bare feet, also just visualizing myself connecting down into the earth. So I make sure that I'm not getting too sort of out of body in that sense.
That's so interesting. I was thinking, do you have 2 to 3 tips how to ground? And immediately you started to answer the question without me asking. So as I understood, 3 tips to ground is like the food you eat, walking barefoot on the ground. I heard also water, moving water, I heard helps a lot because of the electrons and ions, and to visualize yourself having deep roots into the ground, into the earth. That are like tips. Do you have any... Is there any other tip you would add to those 3?
Well, one of my favorites is going to the sauna. And also sauna back
for
then,
grounding.
I was also using float tanks a lot. I haven't done that a lot recently, but I also, like, when I moved into this house that I'm in now, the first thing I did was I bought myself an in-home sauna, because I love just sitting there and drinking lots of water and then sweating it all out, you know, because it really does bring me into my body. really anything that's going to bring you into your body is grounding. So like food is definitely one thing. So if you are feeling a bit ungrounded, anything that's, I'm trying to think, like usually like sweet potatoes, pumpkins, things that are sort of under the ground, obviously are very grounding. Carrots can be very grounding. And the colors will give that away as well. I mean, like carrots are, well, you get lots of different variety of carrots, but typically we eat orange carrots, right? So they're very good for the lower chakras. I do have rainbow carrots growing in my garden as well, and they're very yummy and also very grounding. Yeah, so just, you know, even certain herbs and things like that, spices, just depends on sort of, I guess, what you're drawn to. I'm very in tune with what I eat. So like, for example, I like to have seasonal fruits and vegetables as well. Like when winter comes around, I love having pumpkin soups. Whereas in the summer, I'm probably more likely to have more like fruits, berries, like things that are available. And also as a sort of ongoing maintenance, I do a bit of fasting as well. So usually around Christmas every year, because that's summer here for us, I don't fast in the winter. My body type just, it doesn't suit me, but different people are different. I like to fast in the summer because then I can do easily like a 5 or 7 day water fast or juice fast. And I find that just resets me for the year. So that's something I've been doing every year for maybe, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years now.
Okay. Hey, because I'm right now on the 10th day of a water fast, but I had bouillon soup because it's very hot and I felt like thirsty all the time. And I know if you drink too much water, you demineralize, right? So
yeah,
I took some just bouillon with nothing else. It's the 10th day.
But fasting isn't always grounding as well. Just
exactly. Like, that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah. It is in the long term, but not necessarily in the moment. Because in the moment, like when I fast, usually by day 2 of a water fast, I'm tripping out. Like everything is colorful and all my chakras are open and my third eye is pinging. And sometimes I don't even sleep. But then when I finish the fast and my body has integrated everything, then I feel like I'm a lot more in my body and it sort of resets everything.
Okay, so for me, it will be coming because I don't sleep very much. I wake up every 1.5 hours the last 4 or 5 days.
That's quite normal.
And I'm all dizzy. And 2 or 3 days ago, I had to work at school to present that I can use the machines and my head was just so numb. But there was something else. I mean, I have a list of questions. Just believe me, while you talk, I'm just have all these points. You mentioned something about whatever, the Saturn being in the return into your house or whatever it was. I don't remember exactly. But I also know on Wednesday, they said something with the planetary constellation that a lot of people were very low in energy, which are sensitive. So how much do you know about astrology in these terms now that you mentioned all the other things? And how are you listening to it?
To be honest, I don't spend a lot of time like reading about it or focusing in on it. I do feel the energy flows quite intuitively. Like I seem to always just somehow be in flow with the planetary energies and I move with those energies, but it's not an intellectual thing for me. Like a lot of people will sit there and they'll look at the forecast of the week and go, oh, well, this planet is in conjunction with this planet and this thing is happening. And so I'm probably going to feel like this. And I'm like, that's like, it's great. I mean, but I don't really pay a lot of attention to it. So for me, I'm just kind of in it. I don't necessarily need to know intellectually all the different movements of the planets and stuff like that. But I have like a felt experience or awareness of what's happening with the planet generally.
Okay. And when I continue there, I was also writing down the sun flare or the sun's energy and Gaia's frequency, the Schumann resonance. I've heard that we had a reset lately. I don't know when, what actually happened. I just heard it this week and that the Schumann frequency is not very stable at the moment. So it's kind of like recalibrating. And can you feel these things when the sun is sending more energy to the planet, apparently, or changing the DNA reset or something like that? I'm not so deep into it.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, right? I've been in this space for 10 years and like every month something somewhere is happening and someone's saying that there's a flare and something is happening with regards to that. And then you get all those groups of people that are constantly like, oh, I have all these ascension symptoms because of this solar flare and this planet and this thing. And I don't know, I really have stepped out of that space because I feel like I'm just having my experience. And to be honest, some planetary movements don't affect me at all. Like the number of people that blame Mercury for all their problems, you know, when Mercury goes into retrograde, I'm like, I was actually fine the last few weeks. Nothing actually happened for me. It was great. And so I think there is definitely a level of personal tuning into frequencies as well. I mean, if you're always caught up in what's happening, it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy in that sense as well. So I do feel what's happening with the planet, but keep in mind that our planet is also very multidimensional. And there is a frequency where our planet is already in 5D and all of those other things are actually not really relevant. So it really depends on which version of the planet you're tuned into and therefore how much of that other stuff is going to affect you. Because a lot of those movements exist in what I call the fourth dimensional sort of frequency, which is like connected with the astral and also the time component and the movement of the planets and the time frequencies. It's a very specific kind of bandwidth of energy that you're tapping into, and it's not the only bandwidth that's available. So there are moments in time where I do tune into that and I see what happens and I see all the posts that come up about the Schumann resonance and things like that. I do follow what happens during like solstices. And like, for example, we have the 777 gateway coming up this year, which I'm particularly attuned to. But then there are moments as well when everybody else is going through these big cataclysmic changes. I'm like, no, I'm actually fine. Everything's great. Like my world is going peachy. So I think we have to take some of these things with a little bit of awareness and recognize that there is an element of tuning into different versions of what's actually vibrating. Because if you're tuning into the version of planet Earth that's already in 5D, where new Earth already exists, where everything's already stabilized, then you don't necessarily get so affected by those fluctuations.
Yeah, so I was also having the question, a tip for the listeners which say, oh yeah, but I read my astrology, or I'm in this group which looks at the Schumann frequency or whatever happens with the sun's energy. What would be the tip for them to be more grounded and not be influenced by all these things and look at their life? Yeah, because Mercury or Venus or the moon.
Well, you have a choice for starters. If, you know, many years ago, I stopped watching TV, like free-to-air television, because I didn't like the news and I didn't like the ads and I didn't like all the stuff that was there. And so I stopped watching the news because I didn't want to know, right? And when I wasn't constantly caught up in all the negative stuff that was happening on the planet, my vibration actually started to lift up and my reality suddenly started to have a very different experience. So I think there is very much a personal sort of element in this as well. Now, that's not to say the stuff isn't happening. Like, I know there's all sorts of stuff happening on the planet. But when I gave myself the opportunity to step out of it for a little while and I centered my own frequency, then I was able to go back into those spaces. And instead of getting caught up in the emotional drama, I was simply able to send love and light into those spaces. So I think sometimes you have to kind of remove yourself out of it. And this is a space of what I would say is transcendence. When you transcend beyond it, then you can go back and support it without necessarily being caught up in it. And I think that's what a lot of people need to learn. Like, yes, the planets are always going to be doing their thing, but even the planets have higher dimensional versions of themselves as well. And if you're tuning into that higher frequency, then Mercury isn't always bad. In fact, it's a beautiful energy that can be very supportive. When certain planets are in conjunction or when Chiron comes around, it doesn't necessarily need to wound you. Maybe it can just be a gentle reminder. So there are ways that you can still receive the lessons from these, you know, movement of planets without necessarily getting caught up in the cataclysmic stories that everybody seems to paint about it. Because that to me just feels very low vibrational. And it's the reason why I don't get too caught up in it. Because a lot of those groups, it's like people have just created another drama triangle, but with the planets instead of people. And I look at it and I'm like, really, like, I'm sure we can kind of move beyond that point and just recognize that there is a level of sovereignty that we have as human beings. We have a level of choice. And when you're connected to the highest divine love frequency, then you can live a life where you're not so affected by those movements of various things that are happening at the emotional level.
Yeah, exactly what you just mentioned. I can see it happening in my life now because I reconnected with my father and he started sending me all these different links about the weather, how it's controlled, about whatever happens militarily in Mexico towards the US, what happens in Ukraine. And like, I can feel this cloud of heaviness sinking on me. So it's definitely true to try to avoid all that. And my sister also sends me a lot of exactly these things about the Schumann frequency, about whatever. So it's really nice that you call it like the drama triangle. No matter what it is, it can be the spiritual realm. And I've also heard the term plastic gurus, making a lot of money, but not really being connected. And
I just want to add on that note as well, because I have also seen people then get very isolated in their journey because they go, well, I can't talk to my mom because she's negative, and I can't talk to my dad because he's negative, and I have to, you know, cut myself from all my friends because they're not spiritually awake. And what happens is this kind of judgment that kicks in. And I'm just really mindful if people are in those early stages, like, yes, try and remove yourself from certain situations, but also recognize that isolation isn't always the way to go either. And what you kind of have to recognize is that people might send you stuff, or there might be negative stuff happening in the world, or there might be different frequencies or different planets, but you in your little bubble don't have to get affected by that. So even if your parents are sending you these things, they're allowed to send it to you, but you can choose to not get vibrationally affected by that. And that's the sovereignty that we have as human beings. And, you know, we have in all of us, we have this beautiful, this heart star, this light that's within us. And when we radiate that light, it doesn't matter what links people send us. It doesn't matter what is coming our way. We can have an element of choice of whether or not we get affected by that. It is a lot easier said than done from personal experience, you know, but I think it's a beautiful reminder to all of us, including myself, that we do have a choice over our frequency. So we think that by changing our external environment, like, yes, that is going to have some level of impact, obviously, but it's not the only way. And if your environment can't be changed, I'm mostly speaking to those people who, like, you don't want to cut ties with your family, and you don't want to let go of all your friends, and you maybe do want to go sit in the living room while a family member is watching the news. So how do you manage that without completely isolating yourself? And that takes an even greater level of core strength in your frequency to be able to do that.
Yeah. I mean, you nicely explained what I had in myself. It was just, I realized, I saw the pattern that I got caught in it. And it's, of course, my choice to be caught in this kind of news. I have another question back to your awakening, what was floating in my head, because 10 days ago, I talked to a guy in Bali when he had just had his awakening. It was really psychology-wise, it was hard on him. He felt light and all that, but the people around him were not so positively affected. They put him as crazy, and you will have to be medicated for a long period or all your life. So how has it been for you? Because he said you get all the downloads and all these energies, but your body wasn't ready. How was it? How did the people around you take it? Were they saying you need more antidepressants, you need to be hospitalized, or how was it? Psychology-wise, seeing?
I don't think it was that bad for me. There were moments where I thought I was going crazy. You know what I mean? I certainly questioned myself. I'm a very self-reflective sort of person. So I was like, oh my God, what's happening? This is crazy. I certainly had those thoughts myself. But I think for starters, I was quite mindful of who I initially shared this stuff with. And I think that does make a difference, because if you suddenly start sharing it with people and they're just not like open to it, then it can be quite devastating if they're telling you these things that you're crazy, and you're not, because you're just going through a spiritual awakening, but they don't understand it. So that's kind of their fear coming up. I guess I was quite grateful that I didn't have that level of backlash. I mean, I certainly had people like, you know, people asking me like, are you sure you know what you're doing? Like, for example, when I dropped out of uni, my dad was like, I think you're making a big mistake. And so I certainly had some sort of backlash in that sense. But I think I also had a level of certainty inside myself that I kind of just moved through it anyway. And I got support. And this is where I feel like it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to hire a mentor. It's okay to join a course or to go to circles where this thing is more readily accepted. And that's what I did. I went to, you know, like the sound healings and the yoga groups and spaces where people did understand and where I was able to find my community. And then when I was starting my business and stuff, I mean, I hired a lot of mentors to support me because I knew that I couldn't do it on my own. And obviously now I offer mentoring services to other people because I know that I can help them potentially go through the process a lot more smoothly than what I went through. And I think it's okay to ask for help, and it's okay to recognize that, you know, maybe you don't know how to do this on your own, and there's a lot of services out there that can support you.
Yeah. So there were two questions coming up here. I mean, one is, you didn't share with everyone. I mean, Benjamin told me, like, he was so full of love, and he just saw love and goodness in everyone, said that people, he went 4 times, if I remember right, into the psychiatry in this 1 year. He said he has also heard a lot of stories of people which didn't make it. One was killed by the police because he just was too, yeah, this is all an illusion, and I'm God, and they are me, and everything, right? But one thing is also, what if you don't know what's happening, right? If you're completely like, there's no God, there's just a 3D world. I'm creating my life. No one else is guiding me. It's not predestined that at age 25, I'm going to have an awakening, if I'm prepared or not. Like, it sounds like for me, the guides prepared you like, hey, you will have an awakening at some time, and it's predestined, like when it's going to happen, how you get there, it's up to you, but it will happen. And now you just do not believe in aliens, in dimensions, in God. And now you have an awakening. So you don't know it's an awakening. You will feel kind of crazy. You feel like, what's going on? So how do you know it's an awakening, for that matter? I had not such a hard thing. For me, it's more like gradually, a little bit of inflation.
I think if you have
here.
To ask, you haven't had an awakening yet. Like, the people who've had an awakening know they've had an awakening. I mean, you can't really not know that you've had an awakening. You know what I mean? Like, it's usually pretty in your face. So it's kind of hard to miss it. But I think if somebody was really like a non-believer, and I've heard stories of people who, for example, had a near-death experience, like you said before, and they were complete atheists, non-believers, didn't believe in anything outside the physical realm. Then they had a near-death experience, and then got shown like all this stuff on the other side. And I think the integration of that would be very challenging. And again, to that, I would say, please seek support. Like, don't try and do this on your own, because you can go crazy trying to figure it all out. I think having the support of someone who's walked that path, who can help guide you and help you understand as well that what you're going through is okay and normal, I think makes such a big difference. You know, so if you think that you're going to have this awakening and then try and integrate it all on your own, I mean, good luck. I think you're putting yourself into a very challenging position if you try to do it by yourself. And I think these days there are a lot of support services out there, maybe not necessarily like traditional, you know, counseling and things like that. I think a lot of those people might not really understand. But if you do go more into the spiritual groups and places where people have kind of been through this, I think you'll be much more likely to at least have some sort of reassurance in the journey and to get some level of guidance on that, so that you don't feel so alone, or that you don't end up maybe like, you know, in a psych ward or something like that. Because unfortunately that does happen. I know people who have ended up in psych wards, and it's sad, because then you get treated like you are crazy. You get put on all these meds when in reality you might just be having a spiritual awakening. And sometimes those sorts of professionals don't know how to tell the difference. Of course, there are some people out there that should be in a psych ward and probably need meds, but then there are some people who are wrongfully diagnosed and just not given the right level of support for what they're actually going through.
Yeah, this is another question I had. Do you see a change in the Western medicine and the West psychology towards understanding more, oh, this is perhaps one of those spiritual awakenings instead of medicating? Do you see that we are getting more there?
I think it really depends on who you get. There are definitely some people out there who bridge the worlds and have kind of one foot in each. You know, like, I know licensed counselors who are also very spiritually and in tune and have psychic abilities and things like that. So I think it really does depend on who you go to. And I think finding the right support person is absolutely key. I mean, I don't want to sort of say that all Western medicine practitioners are like not awake, because that's absolutely not true. I know plenty of people who are in Western medicine field who are awake and who are doing some beautiful work from the inside of those industries as well. But I really just think, I think it's a lot to do with the specific person that you meet and whether or not they have the capacity and the capabilities to guide you through what you're going through. And with any mentor or counselor, if you're going to choose someone to work with, you have to pick someone who ideally has some level of life experience, as opposed to somebody who's just maybe fresh out of a course and is just trying to implement theory. Because I think if you're just working off that, then they might not necessarily be able to navigate or see those blind spots for you if you're going through something really major, like a big awakening.
Yeah, it's a spiritual emergency, and find people that help. I'm having to close soon, and I have so many points here. Points I wanted to talk about is like the gateways. What are those? Yeah, what is actually meditation? I mean, you've mentioned something, the law of attraction and visualization, how it works, how to know if it's intuition, how does intuition work, channeling, how's the feeling, crystals. Yeah, and who are we? Like, what is your perspective of that? But I need to close down. So you talked about the Gateway 77, or what was that? 777?
77. So this year, 7th of July, because we're in the year 2023, it's also a 7 year. So it is one of the major gateways of this year.
Is there anything I forgot in this talk we had? Because now we went completely left and right. It was very interesting. And as I said, I have more questions to you.
I think we've covered everything. I'm happy to come back and do a second segment where we can go a lot deeper on the other stuff. But yeah, I think we've covered a lot today already.
Anywhere that people can find you? You have a YouTube channel and web pages.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm mostly active on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. So if you search for Esha Patel, Eshapatel, you will find me on all the channels. I've just recently launched my podcast, First Contact, which is all about facilitating open contact for humanity with extraterrestrial beings. So you'll find that on all the channels, Apple, Spotify, SoundCloud, et cetera. So yeah, definitely add me on Facebook, Instagram. Come check out my YouTube channel. There's a lot of amazing content on there.
Yeah. And I found you on on Facebook, and then I missed the option for this course you offered in December. But I took a few of your guided meditations, which are interesting, but I don't feel anything. So I did it for like 2 months, but perhaps I have to do more. So that's also what you have. I don't remember 9 or 10 of those guided meditations you have on YouTube. You talk about aliens and first contact, and there's a lot of great contact there. And we didn't talk about your travels in Europe, actually. You were just going through the last months. So is there any, besides your own content, is there another content, a book, a podcast, a movie you would recommend people which could supplement what we talked about today?
I don't know. To be honest, I don't read a lot of other people's stuff. Like, I think because I'm kind of like in my own lane at the moment. So I don't really pay a lot of attention to what else is out there. I'm sure there are heaps. I'm sure these resources exist. But yeah, nothing sort of jumping to mind at the moment.
No, but that's perfect. So then any other tips or takeaways you want the people to know besides the ones we had going through the interview?
I think the biggest one is just to trust in the flow of your own timing. You know, I think one of the biggest things I see, and it's quite sad when I see this, is when people kind of give up when they don't see the results straight away. Like, I spent 18 months meditating regularly before I had even a glimpse of like awakening. So like, for example, when you say, oh, I did your thing for 2 months, I'm like, mate, you're just starting out. Like you can't stop after 2 months. Like I spent 18 months doing that. So definitely that perseverance is really important. You don't know always when it's going to happen for you, but you always, you know, the one thing you can do is you can create the environment and create the habits that are going to support that. Because each person's awakening is so unique, and that is between you and God. I cannot tell you what your date of awakening will be, and this is for everyone. What I can say is if you go to my channel and you prepare yourself with the activations and you do the processes and you understand it, when that moment happens, you'll be so much more ready for that. And I think that's such a big thing as well, is like, yes, the activations can help you to open the energy channels, but at the same time, it's about the preparation. And I did 18 months of diligent preparation before I experienced anything. So for anyone out there who's maybe getting a little bit you know, maybe you're a bit jaded by the fact that you've done 2, 3, 5, 6 months of meditation and you're not seeing results, you have to understand that this is a lifetime practice. I'm able to have all the abilities that I have now after like a decade of practice. So don't underestimate the time, but also don't get overwhelmed by that, because every day that you do meditate, you're one step closer. And it really is one foot in front of the other, and just keep trusting in that journey and keep moving, because every single meditation that you do, whether you immediately feel the effects of it or not, is going to support you. And I know that for a fact, because I've had people that have come to me, I gave them one practice and I told them, just go and do this thing. They come to me 5 years later thanking me for that. Not the first year, not the second year, not the third year. 5 years later, they come to me and go, oh, now I understand why that was so powerful for me. So don't give up.
No, I'm meditating on and off. But now when I look at your channel and the different activations you have, I think there's an activation for each chakra and then connecting with the different archangels and other things. I don't remember exactly. How many times would you do it? Like every day, one of those? Or is it like once a week, one of those activations, and the rest of the week, I do, let's say, half an hour, 15 minutes, 20 minutes meditation where I just focus on the breath and the thoughts and the feelings or the energy field?
It really comes down to how much time you have. So what I say to my clients normally is we do one activation a week. And I say to them, do it at least once a week. But if you can do it more times, the same activation in a week, it's going to be more beneficial. So if you are not enrolled in my course and you're making your way through my free content, the best way to do that would be to pick one activation every week and do it maybe like 3 or 4 times in that week. So start, for example, with the root chakra. Spend the whole week on the root chakra. Do it 3 or 4 times. And the next week, focus on the sacral chakra. The whole week, focus on that one chakra. Then the next week, the next one. So even just going through my YouTube stuff, you've got like a whole course worth of stuff there, because you'll spend at least 7 weeks doing the chakras, and then every other video you'll spend a week on, that'll get you through half the year. I mean, so that's like a whole sort of free 6-month course that's available for you just by going to the YouTube channel. There's also another meditation that I have, and it's called the 4 Foundation Practices. And that one's a shorter meditation. It's just 15 minutes and it supplements the activations. So what I say to people is, on the days when you're not doing the activations, do the 4 foundation practices, because at least it gives you the grounding and the expansion. The 4 foundation practices, it's pretty much all inclusive. So in 15 minutes, you will ground yourself, you'll clear your energy field, and you'll connect to source and expand your chakras all in one. So it's a very concise, very precise practice that you can use as a daily practice. And for that one, just send me a message on my socials. You can access it via email, so I'll have to add you in. So anyone who wants it, just reach out to me. I'll be happy to send it to you. So I get all of my clients to do that as a daily meditation practice, in addition to the weekly activations that they're working on as well.
One of my practices is pranayama, right? With breathing through the nostrils. Also not doing it enough. I can see it now. It has been a stressful or tense time to finish my technical project. The interviews have started up again, trying to organize this seminar with the Aztec Indian. And I realized 2 days I didn't do my pranayama, but this is also helping going back to the grounding. Just sit down for 5 to 8 minutes. Breathe through your nostrils as slow as you can and focus on how the breath goes in and combines the feminine and the masculine parts of your temple. I really like that you use the word temple as well. So that's what I have from my Ayurveda master. The only place you live in your life is this body. We just rounded it up.
Pleasure.
And we talk again because of all the other questions I have. We go deeper into the roots and the mystical and the aliens perhaps. And thank you so much, Isha.
Okay. Yes, I look forward to having another conversation. Thank you for having me on here.
Thanks. Namaste.
See. Namaste. Thank you. Bye.